Use of Space Cancer Diagnostics Company. Thanks for joining us today, Cliff.
Thank you for having me, Brett.
So tell us, Cliff, what does Trevera do?
So Trevera is a new company, a recent spin-out of MIT, that has a revolutionary new technology for measuring the effectiveness of cancer drugs for cancer patients using a laboratory test without having to actually try the drugs in the patients and incur all of the toxicity.
And this is a new idea? This has not been done before?
It's a new solution to an old problem, Brett. This is a problem that's been tried and failed for many decades in a row because it's very, very hard to create a laboratory test for testing cancer drugs against cancer cells. So we have invented a new measurement tool called the Suspended Microchannel Resonator, SMR, that is an exquisitely accurate measurement tool that for the first time can provide a predictive measurement in a laboratory test of which cancer drugs are going to work for which cancer patients.
And can you describe like sort of how the technology works, what makes it unique and special?
Sure. It's the thing that makes it so different is that we're not waiting for the cancer cells to die. All of the prior technologies that have tried to measure cancer drug effectiveness in a laboratory setting have done so based on the death of the cancer cells. But the problem is cancer cells die so quickly naturally, it's almost impossible to distinguish between natural cell death and drug-induced cell death. So what we've done is said we don't want to measure the end of the cancer cell's life. We want to measure the beginning of its process toward death. And toward that end, Professor Scott Manalis at MIT in the Koch Center for Cancer Research invented a new measurement tool that is an exquisitely sensitive scale. And it turns out, in partnership with some oncologists at Dana-Farber, they figured out that when you apply an effective cancer drug to a cancer cell, it shrinks by a tiny amount, an amount previously too small to measure. But using Scott's new scale, we can measure the response of a cancer cell to a cancer drug in terms of its loss of weight, and we can do this merely in hours after taking the cancer cell out of the patient. So we've effectively tricked the cancer cell into thinking it's still inside the patient, made such a quick measurement that it behaves in our laboratory test just like it behaves in the patient.
I see. So now does this require getting the cancer cell from the patient into the laboratory within a short amount of time?
It does. This is a live cell testing technology, and handling live cells is harder than handling dead cells, but it's quite doable. And we've demonstrated that we can run this test using cells that are shipped overnight, so using FedEx or UPS. So if the cells are collected by an oncologist or a cytopathologist one day, they can ship those cells to us overnight. We will test those cells the next day, and we'll actually send the report back to the oncologist at the end of the second day. So this is about a 36-hour test from cell collection to final report.
And so what is the current status of time of tests? How long does it typically take?
Well, the current status of testing cancer cells to figure out therapies is really done by genomics. And there are two challenges with that. The first is what you've just pointed out is timing. A genomic test typically takes a week or two. But the more important disadvantage of genomic testing compared to what we're doing is that it is not very predictive. First, it only works for only about 10% of patients. But secondly, it only gets drugs that are effective about a third of the time. So let me tell you sort of the two major approaches to drug effectiveness testing. The first one is to do direct drug testing. The second is to do indirect drug matching. And an excellent example of direct drug testing is in the world of antibiotics. If you get an infection, you go into your doctor, they take a blood sample, they grow up the bacteria in a dish, they hit it with a bunch of antibiotics, and they give you the drug that's the most effective. That is really a good method. It works for about 98% of all patients with infections. Let me contrast that to what we do in cancer, what's the current medical practice in cancer that we're setting out to change. The current medical practice is you get a test made of genomics. The doctor then doesn't actually test those cells against any drugs. What your oncologist does is it looks up the results of clinical trials based on your sex, your age, your genomic markers, and says, aha, what other patients who've had your similar kinds of characteristics have taken drugs that have worked some of the time? And that's the information the oncologist uses to select a drug for you. As I said, it works for about a third of patients. What we're doing is switching cancer from the drug matching model to the drug testing model. So rather than matching you to other patients who are somewhat like you and giving drugs that work for some of those patients, we're saying, no, we're going to take your cancer cells, we're going to run them by dozens of different cancer drugs, we're going to pick exactly the drug that works for your unique cancer, and we're going to do that within 36 hours. So it's a major change to the way drugs are identified and selected for cancer patients.
So what do you think is the significance of this? What impact will this have on the business of, or the treatment of cancer?
Well, it'll have two, I think, enormous impacts. The first impact it'll have is oncologists and patients. They no longer have to go through the process of sort of guessing which drugs are going to work and administering those to patients, have them work a third of the time. And most patients who end up dying of cancer die long before they've tested all of the drugs that could possibly work for them, because they're testing them in their bodies, and it's much too toxic to do that for lots of drugs. So we eliminate that problem, because we could test, you know, dozens and dozens of drugs in the laboratory because we don't have any toxicity problems. The second organization this is going to be really good for is the payers. It's kind of well known in the cancer community that less than half of all cancer drugs administered to cancer patients have any therapeutic value whatsoever. In fact, the value is negative because they're toxic. So the payers are knowing that half of all cancer drugs they're paying for do nothing. What we can do for the payers is say, aha, we have a test that will inform prior to administering the drug to the patient which drugs are likely to work and not work. And this will enable the insurance companies, whether they're public or private, to use their, you know, limited cancer resources to do a much better job of getting the right drug to the right patient at the right time.
Interesting. So from sort of the data and the evidence point of view, what evidence do we have that this actually works? Or have you done any clinical studies on this, and what's the status of that?
Yes, we did a small clinical study between MIT and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And what we did was we ran a study of 9 patients who have multiple myeloma against combinations of 3 of the popular multiple myeloma drugs. And so we ran the testing in our lab, and we said, well, we expect these drug combinations to work or not work for these patients. And then we compared that to the actual clinical outcomes of those 9 patients. And we got 9 out of 9 right, meaning 6 of the patients were sensitive, and we said, yep, those 6 should be sensitive, and 3 of the patients were resistant. And we said, yep, those 3 patients should be resistant. So it's a small test, but it's still a dramatic result that a laboratory test could predict a patient outcome. What we're doing right now at Trevera is scaling that study up. So we're now running a 100-patient multiple myeloma clinical study, you know, appropriately blinded with a CRO and an IRB, and we have 6 wonderful academic medical center partners, which include Dana-Farber, our initial partner, and then we've added Mass General, Weill Cornell, Mount Sinai, City of Hope, and most recently Emory. So with these 6 academic medical center sites, we'll be collecting patient samples, running the study, and publishing the results of the study sometime in the first half of 2020.
So what has the feedback been from some of the physicians and clinicians that have been involved in this? What are they saying about this idea?
Well, the physicians that are close to us are thrilled, because they have literally wanted this kind of technology to succeed for the last 50 years, and it's been tried many, many times and failed. The physicians who are not so close to us are skeptical because they've been told so many times that some new company or some new researcher has an effective ex vivo, meaning in the lab, drug sensitivity test. And it's been such a hard technical problem to solve that no one has solved it. So the people who've seen our results are very excited, obviously waiting for the results of the 100-patient myeloma study, because that's the study that's really going to provide the clinical validation that we need to move this test into clinical practice.
And what do you see as the big clinical need? I mean, it seems obvious, but what do you think is the most important element of the clinical need? What is the greatest clinical need today of patients facing cancer?
Well, the entire world of precision medicine is trying to address this overwhelming clinical need to get the right drug to the right patient at the right time. And it's simply, you know, well understood in the cancer community that despite the fact we have a huge number of FDA-approved cancer drugs, over 500 drugs have been approved by the FDA for cancer, Each cancer patient it does not respond very well to the drugs that they're given in most circumstances. So the entire precision medicine initiative that's been run for the last couple of decades, and on which companies and governments have spent many, many billions of dollars, have been designed to address this problem. The primary technology used in precision medicine is genomics. And 20 years ago, we had great hopes that by sequencing cancer genomes and matching mutations in genomes to drugs that address those mutations, we would simply solve the problem of correctly matching cancer drugs to cancer patients. It turned out it didn't work very well, meaning genomics is one part of the cancer equation, but cancers are so much more complex than just their genomics that the genomics-based matching of drugs to patients did not prove to be very effective. So the entire precision medicine community, which continues to do good work in developing genomic matching, is extremely interested in finding other technologies and other approaches that do a highly effective job of matching the right cancer drug to the right cancer patient.
Can you talk a little bit about the incumbents and/or the competitors and how this would, who you're going to be taking market share or business from and the impact on the marketplace?
Well, there are no laboratory tests for cancer drug effectiveness that have any significance in the marketplace. So the effective size of the market for the kinds of testing we're doing is really zero. This is a new market, a whole new category of testing that's had no commercial successes so far. But the laboratory testing market for cancer is quite large, about $60 billion globally, almost $30 billion of that in the U.S. So there is a huge medical industry for testing cancer patients and doing the best we can do as a cancer community of getting them the right drug. So as we introduce a test that's more effective, we see some of that $30 billion of cancer testing money, moving from the existing tests that are being used into this new category of testing that would potentially do a much better job of matching drugs to patients.
Interesting. So does that sort of have an impact then on the your intellectual property? I mean, what are the odds that one of these companies that are going to be lose market share to you to develop a competing test or to reverse engineer your idea and do this test themselves?
Yeah, we're very well protected from those kinds of issues. So the core technology we're using is completely different and the technologies that have been used for any other cancer drug effectiveness testing, and of course I mentioned they didn't work very well. Our technology was invented at MIT in the Manalis lab. There's an extensive portfolio of patents that protect the technology, and MIT owns those patents. And we have exclusively licensed those patents from MIT for the fields of cancer and immunology. So we are quite confident that no one will be able to reverse engineer this technology and bring it into commercial practice because our IP is fully blocking of that endeavor.
I see. So can you talk about the company and its ownership and how you've been funding? Can you tell us a little bit about how the financing for this new venture?
Sure. We're only about 18 months old. We raised our Series A financing in the beginning of 2018. We did what amounts to a $5.7 million Series A and then extended it a few months later to a $7.7 million Series A financing. The founders of the company, which include myself and Scott Manalis, the professor who invented the technology, and then three MIT PhDs and postdocs who worked with this technology for the last 6 years in Scott Manalis' lab, all left MIT to join Trevera as the founding technology team. So the founders are minority owners of the company, and our investors are the majority owners of the company. And we are sometime in early next year going to go out and raise a Series B, and we're looking to do that in the venture capital industry.
Interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about, before I do that, can you talk about sort of the status of where you are now? I mean, give me some of the milestones and the key events that are coming down the path.
Sure. There are three key events that we're accomplishing with our initial Series A financing. The first is what I mentioned is completing our 100-patient myeloma clinical study to fully validate the technology in a carefully controlled and in a scaled-up model of measuring against multiple myeloma. The second key event is demonstrating that this technology works outside of multiple myeloma. Now, that's been our focus, and we've gotten very good at handling myeloma. But there's nothing myeloma-specific or even blood cancer-specific about our technology. We believe it will be just as effective in solid tumors as it is in myeloma. We are currently running two projects right now in solid tumors, one in the lung cancer space, one in the breast cancer space, to demonstrate kind of at the proof of concept level that the technology is going to work as well in solid tumors. And then with the Series B financing and beyond, we'll do similar large-scale patient validation studies in the various different cancers. The third thing we're doing with our Series A funding is we are setting up a CLIA lab, because we expect that as we come to the end of our multiple myeloma clinical study, we are going to start getting requests from oncologists to test patients. And the proper and appropriate way to do that in the United States is to set up a CLIA lab under the FDA guidelines, so that we're providing the high-quality test and measurement services that oncologists expect for their patients.
So in terms of the tests in the lung and breast, will those be similar to the myeloma, the nine-patient kind of a test, or how will those
work? Yeah, the first proof of concept will be just exactly that. We might do a few more. It might be 10 or 20 patients, but we won't try to do 100 on day one. This is just to really understand what differences there are between breast and lung versus myeloma. The key difference, of course, is how you get the cells. In myeloma, cells are acquired through a bone marrow biopsy. In breast and lung cancer, they're not. The cells are not in the blood and the bone marrow. They're actually in a tumor. And so we are running studies right now for collecting those cells, both through fine needle biopsies and then potentially also through collections of ascites and pleural effusions and sort of the liquid versions of cell collection that occur in cancer patients. So cell handling is quite different between blood cancers and solid tumors, but the core measurement that we're making in terms of the weight response of cancer cells to cancer drugs is identical across all cancers.
So how about a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this and what you've been doing with your career?
Sure. Prior to founding Trevera, I was the CEO of a company called Complete Genomics. I founded that company back in 2006 and was the CEO for 10 years, took it public, and eventually sold it to a partner based in China. And what I did as the CEO of Complete Genomics was we did the first really high-quality whole human genome sequencing of people and of cancers. So I was acutely aware of the enormous impact that genomics was going to have on cancers, and believed when I founded Complete Genomics in 2006 that we were really going to crack the code on cancer by doing high-quality cancer genome sequencing. And, much to my disappointment and to the disappointment of the entire cancer community, even though we can sequence cancer genomes with, extraordinary accuracy, that information alone about the mutations in the cancer genome have not enabled us or the cancer community to match the right drug to the right cancer patient. So when I met Scott Manalis at MIT, where I sit on the visiting committee of the Department of Biological Engineering, and I get exposed to all of the wonderful research going on at MIT in biological engineering in general and in cancer in specific, I thought this was the most extraordinary approach to figuring out which cancer drugs to give to which cancer patients, because it's an approach that kind of is an end run around all of the extraordinary complex biochemistry of cancer. So rather than having to understand all the genome and the proteome and the epigenome and the metagenome and the tabulome and all of the just mind-bogglingly complex biochemical processes that enable cancers to survive in humans, we could simply skip all of that complexity and go right to a direct measurement of whether a drug was working or not working for a cancer patient without having to understand the complex mechanism of the drug. And that, I felt, was going to be the extraordinary breakthrough that we needed to really do a better job of providing cancer care to patients.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a great history and a lot of background in the space that you're entering now. What sort of final remarks or thoughts or comments would you give to prospective Series B investors as to why this would be, why this is a good investment?
Well, I think that the reason this will turn out to be such an important company is because of its two constituents, the people that really care about cancer drug effectiveness. The first group that cares is, you know, patients and their oncologists. They have been thwarted by the lack of effective testing technology for figuring out which cancer drugs to give to which cancer patients. And I think as we begin to demonstrate that, not only in myeloma, but across solid tumors, I think that the interest in the patient and oncologist community is going to be explosive. But the second one is, the second constituency for our technology I mentioned is the payers. You know, the payers are facing a really difficult problem as the immunotherapies come online, which in some patients are proving to be really effective, not in all patients, but the costs of those immunotherapies are extraordinarily high, and it's going to really be difficult for payers to figure out how to allocate their resources to getting these effective new immunotherapies to patients. What Trevera offers is the possibility of taking effectively old cancer drugs, all of these cancer drugs that are sitting on the shelf, many of which are off patent, they're very inexpensive to use, and for the first time being able to effectively use those drugs for cancer patients. So it not only will have extraordinary healthcare benefit to patients and oncologists, but I think also will have an extraordinary healthcare economics benefit for payers, and that's part of the reason we're so excited about the technology.
Can you put any sort of numbers on that? You know, approximate before and after. You know, what a payer will spend in this diagnostic space now versus what they might spend in the future.
Cancer drugs right now. The most popular of the cancer drugs, the new ones, the kinase inhibitors. They typically cost a few hundreds of thousands of dollars per year to administer a cancer patient, from $100,000 to $300,000 a year. The immunotherapies can cost millions of dollars a year, but just focusing on the popular cancer drugs today, if we can prevent one patient from getting a $200,000 a year drug, and we can do it with a diagnostic test that costs a few thousands of dollars, you know, less than $10,000 initially, and ultimately getting down to typical pricing of genomic testing, which today is around $2,000, you know, saving a $200,000 drug regimen with a $2,000 test is the kind of thing that we're going to be able to do. So we expect sort of 100-to-1 savings for the payers who no longer are going to have to pay for drugs that prove to be ineffective and move patients directly onto effective drugs.
That's excellent. And so in terms of the margins and the sort of, I guess, revenue and or profit opportunity for the company, can you talk a little bit about kind of return on investment or how the earning potential of the venture?
Yeah, this test is a very inexpensive test. We do it using desktop boxes. They sit on a bench. The reagents are drugs, but we use these, nanomolar quantities of drugs. So the drugs that we run tests on in our lab cost almost nothing. We're shipping, FedEx and UPS overnight to get cells into our lab using standard media. So sort of the cost of goods associated with running our tests tends to be quite small. The instruments themselves cost a few thousand dollars to make. The long-term business model of this company is clearly going to be an IVD, an in vitro diagnostic. So initially, we're going to set up our own CLIA lab and start validating our technology with patients. But the long-term economics of this company is going to be to sell boxes and kits, deliver instruments into all of the cancer hospitals that want to run cancer testing and that can do it same day inside their laboratories, and then sell them kits that have drugs and media in them and say, here, you plug these in and run them. So this will be a classic IVD business. You know, the margins in the IVD world tend to be around 80%. This is a kind of a very similar and straightforward kind of a company for doing that. But initially, we'll set up our laboratory developed test market system and laboratory that sells through our CLIA lab. And then within a few years, going through the much more extensive FDA process of certifying an IVD than is required to certify a laboratory-developed test, we will be selling instruments and reagents globally, starting in the United States, but obviously expanding throughout the world.
Do you have a sense of the general range of what the boxes and the kits will cost to the market?
Yeah, the boxes will cost, in the order of $10,000. So these are not $100,000 boxes, which is great, meaning anybody can buy them. And the end user, the reimbursed price of the kits will end up being around $2,000, because this is now the stable cost of good genetic testing. We will obviously provide margin to the hospitals. So the kits, if they are able to get reimbursed at the $2,000 level, we'll be providing them kits at the pricing of around $1,000, so they can get 50% margins. And our cost will be substantially less than $1,000. Our cost will be down to a few hundreds of dollars, so we're running 80% margins. So we think there's plenty of margin in the entire value chain to make this into a very, very large IVD business.
And how many potential hospitals and or outlets are there that would be candidates to purchase this test?
Well, there are 5,000 hospitals in the United States that see cancer patients. And with a $10,000 box and a $2,000 price on a kit, every one of them is a candidate. We certainly see them rolling out in the major academic medical centers that do cancer care. There are about 70 major cancer centers in the U.S., and that'll be the initial rollout. But interestingly, the U.S. is probably one of the smaller markets for this technology. You know, EU is about double, double the size, and the biggest market will be China, and so we don't have initial plans to go into China. I've done that before. That just takes scale to be successful at that. So we'll start with the U.S., we'll then go to EU, and finally we'll get to China. And so we think it's going to be, many thousands of hospitals that will each have a box and be able to run highly effective SAMD cancer testing for their cancer patients.
Well, Cliff, it sounds like a terrific concept, terrific idea, meeting a really big and critical need, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Brett. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
So that was Cliff Reed, Dr. Cliff Reed, the CEO of Trevera, developing interesting new approach to cancer diagnostics. Thanks for joining OneMed Radio. Good day.